Records. It's pretty positive that Mr. Carter is a real liberal. It's the most liberal indication we've had, that along with the endorsement of the New York Liberal Party. I really can't understand what he talked to Governor Wallace about. Surely it wasn't busing or amnesty or defense spending, but maybe those things can be explained later. So we're hoping that Mr. Mondale may yet come south, and we'd be very pleased to have our debate in the south. We think we should have it in the south. Well, we were an extended invitation in Greenville, South Carolina, but we'd be happy to go anywhere in the South. This wouldn't be a bad spot.
Here in Birmingham?
Right. I mean, I'd be the choice. We can agree on a choice. We're very flexible on a choice. It just seems to me that Senator Mondale is my friend. He's also probably the most liberal, one of the most liberal Democrats in America. And one way to take a look at his record and his liberalism, and by doing that, Carter's liberalism, is to have the debate in this area. It's not enough for Carter to say, well, I'm from the South, so I'll take it for granted and move on to the Midwest or Northeast. I think we ought to look at the entire ticket.
Senator, do you think the action with Vice President Rockefeller in New York the other day will cause any problem for votes for the Republican Party?
I don't know. That was Vice President Rockefeller's action, but not mine, so, and he's not running. My Southern strategy in North Carolina just gone to some other meeting, but I wanted to say hello. I want to thank you for being here. I trust we haven't delayed you too long. We say right on in the South, not right off. That's the Republican word, right on. No one's riding off the South, not the state of Alabama or any other place in the South. I've just, in a few brief responses to questions, indicated to the press that today and from this very spot in Birmingham, I'm asking my counterpart on the Democrat ticket, Senator Mondale, that our TV debate be in the South. I think Southerners ought to have a chance to look at his very liberal voting record. I think our debate should originate in the South, and we await Senator Mondale's reply. It's one thing to be born in the South, it's another thing to have a philosophy. And I believe that the good people of Alabama and all over the South and my state of Kansas and the far West are looking for a conservative philosophy. And I believe that conservative philosophy is rests with one ticket, the Ford Dole ticket. And on the other hand, on the other hand, we have the very liberal Carter Mondale ticket. And I don't care where Mr. Carter was born. When he picked Walter Mondale as his running mate, he, at that time, showed America his true liberal colors. And he was endorsed last week by the New York Liberal Party. If you need any more proof, we'll try to give you that later on tonight. But I just want to thank the band for the outstanding music. Thank you for being here. And I like the signs. I don't care if he does grow peanuts. We're going to meet him on November 2nd. Thank you very much. You may want to turn your chairs either way, it'd be all right. Can you hear me in the back? Can you hear me on the left? Right, no left in this room, right. Wasn't too long ago, I asked somebody that, Bill, and I said, can you hear me in the back? And the guy said, no, and the lady up front said, I can. I'll trade places with you. So I be a little careful. Well, I don't know. Jack gave my speech, and Bill gave my jokes, and John gave the benediction. So I think I'll just go on home. I saw my good friend Jim Martin earlier, too, but I somehow lost him. We were headed for a meeting, but I know... Oh, there you are. Hi, Jim. Good. I apologize for being a little late for dinner, but we were working. We were having our picture taken with anyone who would volunteer, and there were 12 people in the room. It takes a while to get them to stand still. So we're very pleased to be here. In fact, being a Republican, I'm pleased to be anywhere these days, and I can't think of a better place than being in the South and in Alabama, where I can discuss in a few minutes the fate of a neighbor of yours. It's either him or us, and I think I'll just stick with us. And there's Senator Mondale and Tuesdale and all those others, but a number of people have been asked when this first happened why I was chosen, and I can say that more people are asking now than were a month ago as I've traveled around the country. Otherwise, we've been very effective. But I've told the story, but I think it's worth repeating because every time I tell it, I wonder myself how it happened. But about a month ago, on the 19th of August, that was the last day of the convention, and Mr. Ford had won the nomination. He'd gone to the Alameda Plaza Hotel, and Reagan had talked with the president. And the next morning, of course, the president wanted to choose someone for vice president, have that person available by noon. And we'd been passing out lists all week, but I discovered on Wednesday the president wasn't in the hotel where I'd been passing out the list with my name at the top. And so he never got one of the lists that I had prepared. I had little notations, outstanding, fantastic, leader in farm areas, veteran, you know, all these things. But he never saw those. So I thought, well, little communications gap there, so it probably wouldn't be me. But in any event, that morning, we heard on one of the networks a prediction that the list had now been narrowed to four people. One was Ann Armstrong. She's was in Scotland at that time, and I didn't see how she could possibly get back by noon. And one was Bill Ruckelshaus. He was in Tacoma, Washington. And besides, his name's too big for a button, and I figured, well, he probably wouldn't make it. And that left Senator Baker and Senator Dole, and I told Elizabeth, I said, if they don't go in alphabetical order, I've got a chance. So that's... And then about an hour later, we heard a lot of commotion in the hall. People were starting to gather, reporters, and we knew that something was going to happen on that floor. And our room was right next to the Connolly suite, and I thought, well, Big John's going to be the one. But anyway, just as a matter of information, I said, Elizabeth, go over there and put your ear to the door and see what they're saying. See if you hear any name that you're familiar with. That's legal in Kansas City. But my name was mentioned. She didn't know in what way, whether someone had a vodka and pineapple juice or whether somebody was just... it's a lot better for you in peanut butter, believe me. It doesn't stick to the roof of your mouth. Would you buy a used peanut from Jimmy Carter? Let's see, where was I? Oh, yeah. Well. At any rate, the president did call, and just as, again, a matter of precaution, being so near the Connolly room, and he said, when he first came on the line, I said, I accept. And I wanted to say it before I identified myself, thinking he might have gotten the wrong number. So once I had said that, he just couldn't change his mind because he's a man of his word, and I had three witnesses. So We hit the ground running, and we've been running ever since, and I think and I hope that I've been of some help to the president. I'm very proud to be on the ticket with President Ford. He's a great American. As I said many times before our convention, we were very fortunate in our party. We had two outstanding candidates, and they didn't have any. And we had Governor Reagan and President Ford. And I don't care whether you're a Democrat or Republican or Independent, you had to be moved and thrilled and proud you were American the night that President Ford and Governor Reagan stood there with their arms around each other talking about America. And that's what it's all about. America is what it's all about. And so we went to, first stop, we wanted to hit a major urban area, so we went to Russell, Kansas. It's my hometown, incidentally. We were going to have the convention there this year, but both our motels were booked solid, so we went to Kansas City. But we stopped there, and on the way, the president thought it might be good if I went to Seattle. They were having a Legion convention there, and Governor Carter was going up there. And he did go up there. And so I decided to go there. I had my Legion cap with me, and my dues were paid, and otherwise, not doing anything that day. And so I followed Mr. Carter on the platform, and he'd been there the day before talking about his great record as a nuclear engineer and other things. And he said to the American Legion that he was against amnesty, but he thought there ought to be a general pardon for all draft evaders. Well, I got out my dictionary, and I find that when you look at the word amnesty, it says general pardon, but he knew amnesty was a code word with the American Legion. And it just occurred to me that that wasn't the right position to take. And so I told my fellow Legionnaires the next day that I was opposed and President Ford was opposed to either blanket amnesty or blanket pardons. And as long as we still have hundreds of men missing in Southeast Asia, I'm going to concern myself more with these forgotten Americans than with those who forgot America. Now, we've been in several states in the South. We started out in Georgia. I thought we ought to start where our chances were the best. Where they really knew the opposition. And when I arrived in Atlanta, I called Governor Carter and had a little trouble getting him because, like everything else, he had three phone numbers. He's got three positions on every issue, and he had three phone numbers. We finally did reach him. He was very nice and very cordial, said he was happy I was there. And I was happy I was there, too. And I told him in a very, I think, proper way, in a very dignified way, that, you know, we were in the South to campaign. We understood it was going to be a difficult race. But I wanted to make it clear at the very outset that we were not writing off the South or any Southern state, that our words are going to be right on, not right off. And we're going to do that time and time again. And then we went to South Carolina. I guess that's a Southern state. Strom Thurmond told me it was. Then my wife's from North Carolina. She's our Southern strategy. We went to North Carolina, and then to Arkansas, and to Texas, and Kentucky, and now we're in Alabama. And next week, President Ford is coming south. And it ought to put to rest once and for all that the Republican Party or the Ford Dole ticket is writing off any part of the South or any part of this country. And I say that very sincerely. Today, as I got off the plane at the airport, I suggested that it might be appropriate, and I challenged Mr. Mondale, that we have our debate, which is supposed to be somewhere around October 15 in the South. It just seems to me that if you can't see him in person, you ought to see him on television, Carter doesn't want to bring him down here with that liberal voting record. He's trying to hide him up north, fly him in and out of planes at night, and hide his voting record, which is 100% ADA, the most liberal senator in the Senate of the United States, and one of the most liberal Democrats in America. That's that conservative ticket they keep talking about. And he says, my views are compatible with Walter Mondale's. And I just say this. Let's just have a debate in the South. Let's talk about some of the issues that Mr. Mondale has supported, some of the programs and some of the votes. Let's ask him about this conservative or moderate ticket and ask him about some of Mr. Carter's positions and if their views are compatible. And I would hope that in the next week or so that we can negotiate with Senator Mondale. We've been invited in Greenville, South Carolina, by representing the League of Women Voters when I was there. So it is a legitimate invitation that I extend to Senator Mondale. And I think it might be helpful to the South to expose my views and expose his views and our voting records. I think it would help you make a better choice. I think it would help you make the right choice. So if you can help urge that along, we'd appreciate it very much. Now, there's been some talk about neighbors, and I'm not trying to establish myself as a Southerner, but I did spend some time at Fort Benning and Camp Polk and Camp Breckenridge, and that may not qualify me, but and that was in the Army, not in any other area of the camp or the fort. I want to be, and President Ford wants to be, your philosophical neighbor. We can't be your geographic neighbors. We're not from the South. But the name of the game is philosophy. It's not where we come from. It's not where we live today. It's how do we act, and how do we believe, and how do we vote, and what's our record, and what do we promise. And so I ask those here tonight, and we appreciate your coming, and Temple, you've done an outstanding job, and I hope you've raised some money. And I know you have, because many were telling me around the room. But I say, they were telling me they were happy to be here. But I say take a good hard look at our ticket. And take a good hard look at the Carter Mondale ticket. And let us be your philosophical neighbor. And we'll give you the other neighbor back. I don't know whether Jimmy Carter, Governor Carter, or Mr. Carter, I never know quite how to address him. I think it'll be Mr. before long, but he sort of claims the South is his own. He says, it's in my pocket. We've got it. He says that in effect. Now, I can understand why Mr. Carter would like to claim the South, but I'm a little lost to understand why many Southerners want to claim Mr. Carter. It may be that while they've listened to what he said down here, the news of what he said up north and west and other places this country hasn't traveled this far. Because what Mr. Carter says in one place is not what he might say in the next place. And that's why we're having three debates, you know. He demanded, and President Ford finally agreed, that since he has three positions on each issue, we ought to have three debates. I'm not accusing him of being careless about his positions. I guess I am, come to think of it. But I do worry about the fact that he doesn't always match his record or the words in his own handcrafted party platform. Now, in the South, in particular, the family unit and family ties have always been especially strong. It's one reason that the South held together in the terrible days after the Civil War and again during the Depression and the great wars of our generation. Now, Governor Carter is a family man, and like anyone, he tells us he believes that the family is inviolable and that it's the basic unit of our society. But his chosen running mate is Walter Mondale. And Senator Mondale believes that the government can solve almost any problem confronting the family. Indeed, he has sponsored the so-called Child and Family Services Act, a paternalistic scheme designed to inject the federal government even further into child-rearing roles that you and I believe properly rest with the mothers and fathers. And family tradition are strong in the South. They're strong in America. Americans believe that government was made to serve and protect the individual and the family. But the liberals in the Congress seem to believe, and Mr. Mondale is in this category, that government was made to direct and dominate the individual and the family. And I don't think the people of Alabama and the South like that kind of government domination, and I don't think they will vote for a ticket which will rubber stamp every piece of legislation which seeks to increase that kind of government interference in our private lives. That's one thing I think we might want to debate in the South, the so-called Child and Family Services Act. Now, Governor Carter says he will never lie to us, and I don't suggest that he has. But he does admit, and this is his quote, that he does like to shade his positions to meet what he thinks his audiences want to hear. Well, I say it's time to raise the shades and let the sun shine in on just where the governor does stand. And I guess one place to start would be Mr. Carter's the governor of Georgia. Of course, in considering his Georgia record, we have to be certain we're considering the right Georgia record. We face several problems. For one thing, we have to distinguish carefully between the two Governor Carters. There's the Governor Carter of the speeches. In them, he tells us he was a frugal administrator. He claims he cut administrative costs by more than 50%. Made reforms that saved $10 million in 1974 alone. This Governor Carter compressed 300 agencies into 22 and reduced the bureaucracy. He improved the business climate. He eliminated red tape. His pride and joy, his greatest reform, he says, was the mammoth Department of Human Resources. But the real Governor Carter, his heralded government reorganization was a complete fiasco. It has been repudiated by the Georgia State Legislature. They demanded Governor Busby rescind it, and Governor Busby agreed, calling the Human Resources Department an organizational nightmare. And the reality is diametrically opposite to the claims. And far from improving the economic climate in Georgia and growth in Georgia, Carter's administration only improved the climate for bureaucratic growth. State employment rose by almost 15%, and the budget by almost 60%, while the rate of economic growth, as you might guess, sank to an unprecedented low. But the new Governor Carter, the Governor Carter now running for president, has been denouncing the administration on Medicaid, which does leave much to be desired. But I might remind Mr. Carter, in case he doesn't know, that Medicaid is administered by the states. Some of the worst administration of all this occurred in Georgia while he was governor. Under Carter's system, payments to doctors and pharmacies are sometimes 5 and 6 months late. More importantly, millions of dollars of state and federal funds were wasted. The state was even billed for a water ski trip to Hawaii. And an audit by Governor Busby revealed almost $200,000 in dental payments for work not found in the mouths of patients. But they all smile a lot. And I just think we ought to keep this in mind. Have you ever taken a good hard look at that platform? Don't try to stand on it. It's not safe. It tilts so far to the left, it ought to be checked by OSHA or some other federal agency. It's dangerous. You'd fall off. Anybody in this room would fall off that platform. We looked at it rather carefully. We made a speech in San Francisco earlier this week, and we, by actual count, counted 65 either new spending programs or increased spending programs or expanded spending programs. And this comes from the man, his platform. He says he's going to have a lean government, reduce spending, balance the budget. We just took five of those programs. We didn't have time to add up 65 programs. We took five. And by all conservative estimates, the cost of those five programs is in excess of $100 billion. That's a great deal of money. Particularly when you're talking about balancing the budget. Who's going to pay for it? Where do you get the resources? So we also took a look at this great platform of theirs, and we found that instead of trimming back government and reducing the number of agencies, that the Carter platform would expand or add to or have brand new agencies, not one, not 10, but 22. So this is a man who stands before audiences, says we're going to cut back government, we're going to cut back spending, we're going to balance the budget, we're going to give you everything you want at no extra cost. In fact, we're going to reduce the cost. Well, I would keep that in mind also. We finally get down to the plain fact. He may be a Southerner by birth, but he's a Northern liberal in politics. And that's what it's all about. And he was so confident, or contemptuous of the South, that he picked for his running mate the most liberal senators I've said in the Senate, if not the most, top two or three. That's pretty hard to figure out when you get up in that area. I notice also that he's been to Alabama recently, and he said he had the blessing of Governor Wallace. I didn't know he needed those things, but... But I'm not certain what they talked about. I wonder if it could have been busing. That must have been interesting. I wonder if Governor Carter says the same things to his liberal supporters up north that he said to Governor Wallace on that subject. What did Carter and Wallace say about amnesty? Governor Wallace has always opposed it. And Carter wants a blanket pardon, as I told you earlier. Did they find some magic agreement on gun control? Governor Wallace opposes it. But the Carter platform would control handguns. I might add that one of the 11 senators in the United States Senate who voted for registration of handguns, 11 now, only 11, was Senator Mondale. Did they agree on national defense? I don't believe Governor Wallace. I've never heard him recommend cutting national defense. But Governor Carter says we're going to do it by not $1 billion, not $2 billion, but $5 to $7 billion. At the very time we have growing tensions in the world, he's going to cut defense. Well, I have a funny feeling about cutting defense. We ought to cut out the waste. We ought to cut out the fat. I serve on the Senate Budget Committee. For the first time this year, as Jack and Bill and John know probably better than I, Bill does, on being on that committee, we have some real growth in our defense budget. The past 6 to 8 years, the Liberal Democrats have chopped not $10 billion, but between $30 and $40 billion out of the defense budget. Now, I don't want to be number two in the world. I want to be number one for the sake of peace, not for the sake of war. And all I say to Mr. Carter is, tell us where you're going to cut the defense budget. The three members of Congress know, and many of you know, the Brookings Institute is not known as a conservative haven. You been over there, Bill? We don't even know where the place is. They haven't even told us. But a lot of people think there. They all think alike. It's not bad to think if you have some disagreements. But they said last week in the Baltimore Sun, we got to have more money for defense. And some of the people in Brookings were advising Mr. Carter. They say you can't transfer defense spending to social programs. And I just asked Mr. Carter where he's going to cut the spending. It just seems to me that President Ford has again demonstrated his leadership. He worked with the Congress. We had the first real growth in the defense budget, as I said, this year for a number of years. And again, I think we have to make that choice. We have to decide in the final analysis which man can best lead this country? And I say to my young friends here, and I want to first say that I'm pleased to see so many young Republicans or young Democrats or young independents in this audience. They're the backbone of this country. They're the backbone of our party. And we're proud, and I'm proud that you're here. And I thank you for coming. Let me say finally that I've known President Ford for 16 years. You may have heard Harry Reasoner on ABC News last week, and I'm certain he wasn't being partisan. He said that one thing about President Ford, whether he won or lost, he's still the same man who walked into the White House in those tragic times some 2 years ago. He's still Gerry Ford, the same good, honest, decent American that this country needs for leadership. And that's saying a great deal. He still listens. He's accessible. He understands. And he's a tireless worker. And I find it difficult to believe that Carter is castigating President Ford for everything. Senator Mondale said last week, even went so far to say that President Ford's actions as president were the basic reason for increased suicides in this country. Think what the rate might be later on. But I want to be fair. All I ask, you look at the record. Look at my record, and you're right. Temple, we ought to look at records. We ought to look at our congressional records.